All right. I'm ready when you are. Well, that was you were raising two hands. That was a sure sign that you were going to be able to be here for Friday. All right, we have to deal with some rather grim things tonight. We're dealing with Saturn, and most people have a difficulty with Saturn. And I guess because it represents all of the things in themselves that they don't want to deal with. And then when difficult things come down, they want to blame it on Saturn rather than realizing that Saturn is just putting out what it puts out, and it seems terrible because of what we have in us. Things that Saturn personifies. Darkness is the first personification. But the darkness that we're talking about here is not just like the darkness of color hues, which are called shades. That is a Saturnine kind of darkness, but the darkness that we're talking about is the darkness of ignorance. And it's very difficult to understand ignorance because you don't know what to look for. You've been ignorant so long of something that it is invisible to you. So what Saturn then represents is an ignorance that is something like a blind spot. And it represents awakening to the reality that that blind spot is covering. And because we don't know what we're doing and because we're ignorant of it, we sometimes bump into things quite negatively. And so that is what the darkness of Saturn. It's an ignorance. Now what happens is it all ties together. There's a general specialization in this of a general characteristic of Saturn in all of this that makes logical sense. Saturn likes to specialize, and it likes to concentrate. And when it does that, it separates the attention from everything that it is not concentrating on. And what happens then is one can, with that kind of concentration, one can simplify matters very greatly. But one doesn't realize that one is ignoring all those other things that that are there as realities also. And if it becomes habitual, and if it becomes part of character, to ignore something as though it weren't there, pretty soon you're blind to it. And then in order to be awakened up to full reality, you have to bump into it a few times in order for that to happen. Now there can be various different kinds of motivation for the concentration that ignores things. It can be because of urgency and importance. Like you daren't look at anything but what you're looking at because it's of urgent importance, and if you don't do that, you won't be able to carry out what you're doing. Sometimes it has to do with things that are in the start or in the finish of things. You concentrate on something new, or you concentrate on something when you're finishing it up. Saturn is often there at the very beginning of things or at the very end. The most common type of specialization that is associated with Saturn is preference. Saturn seeks preference. Not only the preference in honors or things like that, or being preferred above other people, the selfishness of I want this, and I want this thing that is most important. Sometimes the ignorance is a matter of denial. We don't want to admit things to ourselves, and so we say they're not there. Negation Saturn is the personification of negation. And so if you try to negate something by saying it isn't there, that's one way of trying to do it. When we do that, though, we're excluding other people and we're taking ourselves out of proper social interaction with other people. It becomes quite unhealthy. Sometimes it is because of insecurity. Sometimes we're afraid that the consequences that come back to us from what we have put out, we won't be able to bear up under them. And so we just ignore them as long as possible. Usually Saturn in the horoscope represents behavior that is very old. It is something that has been unattended to for a very long time, and now it must be attended to. So the house that Saturn is in is indicative of something that you've ignored for a long time. Just ask my wife. I have Saturn in the seventh house, and I ignored her a lot, I guess. And she did all kinds of things to get my attention. And but it's that kind of quality. Saturn in the fifth house can sometimes ignore the children because there are other things you want to do. So there are various different motivations, but it all turns out the same. It also represents the personification of doubt. We ignore things that we doubt. And, you know, even scientists do that. There are things that have been problems in science that don't fit into the general belief structure of reality that science holds to, and they just ignore them for a very, very long time. Sometimes later somebody picks up one of those problems and finds in it an answer that unifies a lot of other things, and that's another way that Saturn can work. It is bringing back something that is old and presumably dead and finding it to be something valuable. Another personification of Saturn is a personification of fate. Now, as astrologers, we know that not really fate doesn't exist, and that's not a denial. There is not something that can't be changed. However, if we haven't worked with something for such a long time and have ignored it so that it has become a weakness that must be addressed, we're going to fail where that weakness is. So some things we have made inevitable. We've made them inevitable by our behavior. And usually it's one of those things, you know what I'm talking about, Saturn always gets you that way. It's one of those things you'd like at all costs to avoid. And it almost seems as if you're trying to avoid it, brings it to you. And I think there is something to that kind of psychology. Now, very often, the things that are fated are things that we hate. There are things that, because they are not pleasant to us, or if they are not to our liking, Saturn makes sure that they are brought into our sphere of living or into proximity of our being until we do get to like them. And it's, you know, there are some people that you have to deal with. They're just meant there to be with, to be dealt with. And then you have to be very careful, because the Saturn person in your life is somebody that you would like to, you know, like to have as a scapegoat. You'd like to say that everything that's wrong in your life is because of the Saturn person. And that is just another form of Saturnine denial. That's another form of negation. Because if you heap all the problems between yourself and someone else onto another person and you don't take them yourself, if you don't take responsibility for your part, you're going to have to meet them sooner or later, and you're going to have to be with the kind of person that you don't want until you do overcome that. So you get to see things backwards. Things are fated sometimes until we overcome our insecurity or our weakness. Usually Saturn is our greatest weak spot in life. So Saturn demands until that's overcome. Saturn also denies. If you're fated in one way or another, Saturn can work by denial. Probably the best example is people who weren't generous in one life and didn't have children. Often in the next life, they are denied children until they really, really want them. And, you know, the denial seems to whet the appetite. It's sort of a negative psychology. Saturn is the master of negative psychology. And if you have been deprived of something, you really want it. I can remember when I was in grade school, I had a lot of negative psychology. We had I lived in a poor area of the state, and lived in a kettle moraine area, and basically it was a little bit of topsoil on top of gravel hills. And so most of the farms around there were pretty poor. And we lived off of hand-me-down clothes and things like that. And I walked to school every day, a mile and a quarter. And it was really pleasant because I knew all of the bird places and animal things and such like that. But almost all of us in the school were poor. Except there was one rich farmer, and his son was named Gerald. And all the rest of us had homemade bread and homemade sausage and homemade jam for our lunches. We didn't realize it at the time. It was healthy food. But Gerald had a Twinkie in his lunch. And he was the envy of everybody else. And he was perverse. If he didn't like that Twinkie, or he was too full to eat that Twinkie, he would grind it under his heel rather than share it with somebody else. Now that denial of Twinkie, I never had a Twinkie in my entire childhood. But when I was in my 20s, I had plenty of them because of what I said to myself in childhood. Someday I'm going to be able to have Twinkies whenever I wanted them. And I ate Twinkies even though I really didn't care for them. And then I became a vegetarian and I couldn't eat Twinkies anymore because they're not vegetarian. All right. Another thing about Saturn as fate is that everything in the greater destiny is done at the perfect moment. It's perfectly precise and it's very timely. And with Saturn, it always seems as if something happens at just the wrong time. Because you're supposed to be exposed to something negative in yourself. Saturn is another name for Murphy's Law. And when things happen according to Murphy's Law, if you sit down and think about something that goes wrong, it has to go that way. I used to do a lot of cabling. And the cable would always get hooked around something, and then I'd have to go take a long walk and unhook it and do all over again. But if you watch a cable as it's moving along, it's like a lasso. It can't help but if there's anything sticking out, it can't help but to snag on something. But if you say in a Saturnine way, in a negative Saturnine way, the world is against me, even the cable is against me, you've got it all wrong. It's like you just have to realize to be careful so that the snags are taken care of and nothing can get you. Saturn wants you to be careful right down to the very last detail. And Saturn always gets what it wants, when it wants it, and how it wants it. So if you can become a positive Saturnine person, you can have mastery and control over most things that occur in life. Now, you notice what's been happening in this part. We have been talking about personifications, and we have personified Saturn as if it was the neighbor around the corner. And that's one of the things about Saturn. It's easy to personify. We personify all of our negations and keep them onto Saturn because we don't want to deal with them. We don't want to assume responsibility. We don't want to assimilate the lessons into our consciousness. And it's very easy to just blame it on Saturn. I had an astrology student at one time that wanted to build a gigantic cannon and blast Saturn out of the heavens. She didn't realize that if that was the case, it would be like an automobile with no brakes, which since she was a pretty strong Leo woman, she would have liked anyway. An automobile with no brakes would be ideal. So Saturn is the planet that is demonized. And it's perfectly happy to take the demonization onto itself because it knows it's going to be able to dish it back to you. It's that kind of a consciousness. Saturnine people will do that. A Saturnine person will lay in wait till just the right moment and then throw something back in your face. And they usually know how to devastate you totally. So in science, for example, it's the undeniable hard fact. Your theory would fit together perfectly, but for this one fact. And it just means that you have to be comprehensive. Saturn wants everything. It's in the game for all the marbles. Now, fate is just one manifestation of something that's much bigger. And that is something that Saturn is a personification of also. Destiny, law, and judgment. Now there's something about this firmness in negation that we would like to call hardness. We'd like to say that Saturn is hard. And in some ways that's correct. In some ways that is fair. But we have to make sure that we are maintaining objectivity. Saturn is always objective unless someone identifies with the negative characteristics. If a person identifies saying, well, if you want to make me a Saturn, I will be a Saturn, and I will, will identify with the powers of vengeance or death or I am going to be the evil one or the dark one in your life. But if we look at cause and consequence, the law or destiny as something perfectly objectified and perfectly fair, we can't do that anymore. There is something that Saturn is said to be cold, and it is coldly impartial. So, in this regard, it will be just. It won't be a loving kind of justice, but it will be a fair kind of justice. I have a Saturnian friend that has just a really obnoxious personality, and he just insists on every last little detail being kept. And people hate him for it, But he's right. Everything has to be according to the law. These are the rules of the game, and we do it this way. And he's someone that you just wish wouldn't be right, because he just takes pride in being that. So Saturn does things to the nth degree, especially in fineness. There is a statement about destiny that is very Saturnian. It's one of the most famous axes of all time. it is the mills of God grind slowly, but they grind exceedingly fine. And that describes Saturn. So, if there are positive and negative walls that define reality, one being assertion and one being negation, the boundary between them is the moment of experience. It's the completion of an assertion or of a negation that results in an event. So we're talking about cause and consequence. Cause and consequence are two sides of the same action. In fact, it's even called the law of action. If you are asserting and taking an action, that is the positive side. But if you have gone to the extent of how far that action can go, and there is a limit, and from that limit there is a recoil or there is a feedback, and you know that things can go no further, that is the Saturnian kind of a consciousness. So Saturn represents limitation. It just says you can't go any further than this. Sometimes it's legalized, and it likes to know all the details and likes all kinds of bylaws and fine print and all of that, but that's just its nature. In this, we can see that Saturn is one of the planets that is the personification of justice. There are two planets that work together that make for good judgment. If you do things to the small, to the letter of the law, that is Saturnian justice or Saturnian judgment. But if you are true to the spirit of the law and look at things in the big picture, that is a Jupiterian type of justice. I've been in court several times. I've been in traffic court. Once or twice, and I've been in divorce court, and I've been in court for other people that have had problems just to be there as a source of strength to them. And I'm always amazed at how judicial judges really are. They really do think, and they do consider every little detail. And I'm even surprised that justices in the Supreme Court, no matter what their politics is, no matter how constructionist or conservative they may be, they still, when they hand down a judgment, they make sure that the big picture is involved. They say, what would be the social consequences if we let this law stand? And that's the Jupiterian side of things. Another personification of Saturn is time, age, ripeness, or maturity. The study of each little moment is like studying punctuation marks. That's the way Saturn seems to proceed from moment to moment to moment. If you look at each moment very carefully and its antecedents and succedents, you have a very good consciousness of time. What came before and what is coming out of this. So as a consequence, Saturn in the positive in the horoscope represents that ability to focus so carefully that one is patient no matter what. It will look for the precise meaning of something or the appropriateness of something, and it'll look for it right down to the last detail, and it'll wait until it is perfectly right. So in this sense, one sees over a whole lifetime, one sees aging and the limitation that comes with it, the restrictions that come with it, as a source of future wisdom and a vindication of all the care that you've taken earlier in life. You've got aches and pains and limitations because you were foolhardy when you're younger, that's what you have to deal with. But if you're careful, if you wear eye goggles and ear protection and things like that, you won't have those same limitations. So Saturn then represents or looks at the history of things. The history of things to understand what transpires in time. Because Saturn knows that no matter what some flaky New Agers think, you can't go back. Cause goes to consequence, and when something has come into being in a moment, you can't undo that. If you say an unkind word that hurts someone, and you know you've made an enormous mistake, you can't take it away. You can have hindsight so that you don't make the same mistake in the future, and that hindsight is a Saturnian thing. But this leads to cautious kind of foresight. Saturn is an extremely foresightful planet. Now, some people don't want to have that kind of foresightfulness because they don't want to look at all the detailed possible things that could go wrong. You know, well, if we sit in this part of the park, there might be ants. Or if we sit under this tree, it might be dripping sap off of its leaves. Most people don't want to spend all of that time looking at the details. But if you're a Saturnian person, it's, you know, you don't have those things happen to you. You're careful enough. If you go overboard with it and you see things not only as possibilities in foresight, if you go overboard and start thinking negatively, you can bring it on. Because where your attention goes is where you go. If you drive down the highway and you look at something off to the side, if you're not careful, the next thing you know, you're pulling the car off to the side. So you can, by being terribly negative, bring things onto you. If you just run a stop sign without seeing that it was there and there's a cop nearby, if you take fear in that moment, the cop is more likely to notice it. It draws the attention to it. So what we're talking about with Saturn is the personification of history. But if it is taken totally, it's punctilious, and it is tedious. So that's, you have to decide what the degree of caution that you want to manifest, because Saturn is manifest caution. Saturn appreciates things being born, and it appreciates things dying. It likes things. You know, that is what marks time, and that is what gives you a realization in a concrete way of something that's been going on. For Saturn, the events in time are like fish in a river. The river otherwise would just be a flowing mass that would have no form to it. It would have nothing distinct about it. But if there are fish in there, you know, you have something that you can focus on, and that it gives life and it gives something definite to it. Saturn also appreciates things like friction, things that wear out. It rules those things. Saturn is the friction maker. Mars doesn't want any friction, and when it comes up against Saturn, it's a terrible kind of thing. It's really frustrated. So all of those things that produce friction, like concretion or ossification or sediment or mineral deposits or anything like that, are Saturnian. It's a history. It's a record of things. And it keeps things definite. If you have friction, if you have brakes, you can stop a car. If you don't have brakes, you can't stop it. And that's Saturn's way of thinking. It is tense because of deadlines, but it gives you a perfect sense of time. Ask somebody who does something like stand-up comedy, or even more, ask a musician what it's like to play out of time. There's no music. The time in music is perfect. Even a rest is a perfect use of time. Another personification of Saturn is the Father. Both Saturn and the Sun represent two aspects of the Father. The Sun represents, represents a more generative aspect of the Father. Saturn represents the personification of Father Time and of the ruler-controller type of Father. This kind of personification is sometimes grim or strict or stern or controlling or not at all life-giving like the Son is, but it is the Father that gives you the things that you need. Like parents who aren't disciplining of their children and don't give them limits, those children grow up to be psychologically unhealthy. They have no form to their life. Now, Saturn may be overly formal, but at least there is some form that you can rely on and that you can get an objective understanding of things from. Saturn, in this sense, as the Father, is not just grimness. There's an attitude about it. It's an attitude that commands respect, and it's of dignity. And if a child is looking up to you and you deport yourself with dignity, the child can see that. That's a wonderful feeling. You can just see the child saying, I want to grow up to be like that, because you have something that stands out, something that you can, you know, hang your hat on. The quality that is associated with Saturn in this way is veneration. When we say that someone is venerable, or when we say that somebody is stately, there's a sense of a presence, and there's a sense of a dignity that one has carried for a long time and has become stately. And there's something, you know, children do want a father who plays with them, but they also want a father who is serious. The Son will play with you, but the Saturn is the serious part. And if you don't have the serious part, you're not going to grow up, you're going to grow up not realizing that there are serious things to life. So Saturn represents the disciplinary kind of father, somebody with authority. Saturn loves to be an authority, and it's willing to take the responsibility that goes along with being an authority. So such like this is the patriarch, the grand old man. I worked with a professor that was in Aries that was a real rambunctious man, but he had Capricorn rising. I'm not sure if Saturn in the first house, like I can't remember anymore. He couldn't wait to become the grand old man. He was playing the part of the grand old man when he was in his 50s already. On the other hand, if one has not learned from the lessons of life, one becomes the tottering dotard, or one becomes the enfeebled geezer. It's old age is the proving. It's the proving of what you've done with your life. And if you haven't been careful, you're gonna be depleted. You're gonna be weakened. I can see things in my life that I would be much stronger now at my age if I hadn't spent myself foolishly in ways that were not at all wise. Now, as my father had Saturn in the 10th house, and he knew what it was to be a father. And sometimes he carried it a little too far, but he knew the thing that there had to be an authority, somebody that sets the ultimate precedent. And my father had the attitude that when it came down to things that were not decided, his precedent was the father is always like, I was here first, and I've seen more than you, and this is the way things seem to me, so this is what is right. You sometimes grow up and dislike that, but it's necessary at a certain age. We can see from this, then, that Saturn is also the personification of discipline or of control. It's a kind of being that's always trying to control things. Now, that can be due to insecurity, and it can be manifest as manipulation. If a person is insecure and they feel they can control their environment, then they feel more insecure. All of what we do with technology and changing the world might to a large extent be saturnine insecurity, because once we lost our clairvoyance and focused extremely much in materialism, we lost our insight into things, we lost our visible connection with divinity, and we consequently have a great insecurity. And that insecurity is spent in technological command of things. It's important because that's what control means. We've mentioned it before that the brakes have to be 5 or 6 times the strength of the engine of the car, because to control the car means you can stop it. Not like young Marshall people think. They think if you put the foot on the gas pedal, that's controlling the car. That's propelling the car toward being out of control. Control means that you can say no, that something doesn't happen unless you allow it to happen. And that can be a very positive thing, and that is the kind of thing that Saturn rules. You can't rule, you can't control, but you can't stop. Now, in order to get this kind of control, one has to have discipline. And Saturn, along with Pluto, is a planet that is extremely disciplined. Again, it has that patience, and it's willing to do all the little things and remain faithful. Obviously, somebody who has a consciousness of time that extends over large periods of time is somebody who's faithful. And so if somebody who is faithful to carrying things out, those are the people who develop disciplines, whether it's playing piano or learning how to do anything in life. And to develop that discipline, everybody knows, concentration. The Mideastern mystic Gurdjieff was able to master all kinds of things in life basically because he could concentrate. So this represents a personification of forbearance and of restraint and of resolve to do anything and everything and to do it efficiently. It wants to do things with class. It doesn't want to do them in a beautiful way, the way Venus does. The class of Saturn is it was done in a slick, easy way, and it was done most efficiently. Now, sometimes we identify with this and carry it overboard. You know, sometimes we focus on things that we do well at and we carry them to extreme, and what was once a virtue becomes a vice. Then this kind of control or discipline or forbearance becomes something like penurious stinginess, or it becomes deprivation, or as things like that, people who would starve themselves just to save something a little more. Another personification of Saturn that we mentioned just a few seconds ago, concentration, along with contraction and consolidation. This is an attitude of consciousness, an attitude of consciousness that contracts the sphere of attention to a point, if possible. And with that concentration of all of one's creative energies to a point, one can penetrate through anything. In almost all forms of mysticism, Saturn is the first thing that one overcomes or develops, the ability to concentrate. If you try to learn meditation before concentration, you might have some transcendent experience, but you won't have an experience that is cogent and that you can do anything with, because it will just be blasé. It'll be kind of floaty, and it won't have the quickness of attention if you do concentration. So if you do concentration and you make a breakthrough to the other side, you get to meditation anyway. And when you get there with a very sharp consciousness. You're awake. You're alert. So Saturn says, all right, let's get to the point. And that's what it is. Whether it's in law, it's res. It's the thing that things must be singular. Is it yes or is it no? And if it isn't yes or no, it's automatically no, because I don't want anything that isn't definite. It's the kind of consciousness that Saturn has. Now, this kind of concentration usually consolidates things or contracts things. With the exception of water, and even water after certain temperatures, when things become cold and contracted, they crystallize and things become dense and they become more and more solid. All of those are excellent words for Saturn. Saturn is the solid state planet. It likes things to be as definite and firm as they can be. So you can see that for the Saturnine consciousness, small is beautiful. Or Occam's razor, it is vain to do with more what can be done with less. And great things are composed of little things. And if you can get all the little things in control, you automatically have something great. Of course, some people carry it too far to get small-minded, but so this represents rigor, where everything is concentrated and firm and solid because of it. We talked a little bit earlier, let's talk a little bit more about limitation. Saturn is the personification of limitation. For some people, to focus on their limitations is to live in isolation. They cut themselves off from from others so that they're socially isolated, or they sometimes do it indirectly. They project out to others and nobody wants to be around them because they're so hateful and you're all alone pretty soon. With limitation, when you're cut off from people, there's loneliness. Saturn is a planet of loneliness. Look for Saturn in the chart, and that's a place where a person is most likely to be lonely. I have Saturn in the seventh house, and there has never been a year or a week, I can't say a day in my life, where I haven't felt that maybe my loneliness that I have, everybody has some kind of loneliness, would be satisfied if I had a partner. And to this day, I really don't know if that's a projection, that I'm projecting my loneliness out, saying it's because I don't have a partner that I have this kind of loneliness, or whether it is an objective fact. If I were more willing to commit and go through anything in a sharing partnership, maybe I wouldn't have that particular kind of loneliness. So it's a tough thing. Limitation lets us know where things are. And if we are living in isolation in our own limitations, we can't blame anybody else. Ultimately, if everything in our life is due to us, it makes us become exceedingly conscientious. And so Saturn is a planet that deals with conscientiousness. And if you've been limited and isolated, you get humble. You get an acceptance of things. If you become conscientious and if you take responsibility for your own deeds as Saturn insists that you must do, you're eventually going to end up being a humble person and you're going to be a person who accepts everything. Not necessarily grimly either. You can just say, you just don't fight things anymore. You say, that's the way things are. And people who practice a lot of concentration get that kind of consciousness. They recognize that this is the nature of something. It can't be anything else because I've looked at it in clear isolation from everything else, and this is its nature. And pretty soon you find yourself walking down the street and somebody does something socially ungraceful with you or something like that. You can't get upset with them. You just say, this is the way it is. They've done what they've done. It's history. It's not such a thing to get all bothering about. So sometimes Saturn, in some cases of extreme limitation, it's voluntary. And so this can be a hermit who will live basically almost with no shelter and live as humble and happy as can be, as simple as can be. I mentioned the story of the King of the Hobos. Every year the hobos get together, usually in Iowa or something like that, and every year they make a new King of the Hobos. And on All Things Considered one time, I heard an interview with the King of the Hobos. And he's just a bum. He would ride trains and go from place to place. And they asked him, "Are you happy?" Because they thought he must be miserable. You know, having nothing and being poor and not knowing where any food is coming from. He said, "I'm very happy." And the interviewer said, "Why are you happy?" And he said, "I don't have the anguish of unfulfilled desire. If you don't expect a lot in life, you won't have to deal with disappointments and anxieties about whether you are going to get what you want or not." Now, I think if that principle can be applied within the realm of desiring, you don't take your desires personally and want them for yourself only, then I think that's a way of life that can be taken in a large sense. I certainly don't want to become a hobo just to have that certain kind of simple, rigorous kind of peace, and not me. Obstruction, impediment, blockage. If we don't handle things well, Saturn becomes for us the personification of a stumbling block, an impediment that stands in our way. And it seems as if some people are obstructions to others. Some people are even obstructions to themselves. And then we have to recognize how much is us and how much is outside of us. Because if we're victims of inward restraint and we have all these hitches inside of ourselves, then we have nothing to blame on someone outside. But it is when someone outside of us blocks our way, especially on the highway, that we want to get them out of the way. You can see this is a result of selfishness. Saturn is the personification of selfishness. We obstruct others with our selfishness, and with their selfishness, they obstruct us. They hold us back, or they seem to be holding us back. That's, again, a projection or a personification of something that's really inside of us. Now, people who are obstructions to us might very well play that role intentionally. They might try to use fear on us, or they might try to use social form and the convention, like saying you're a bad boy, or they might try to smother or suffocate any kind of activity that you want to do. So Saturn represents a planet that can be claustrophobic, meaning that there is more intimacy that a person is capable of living with without fear. Claustrophobia and intimacy and fear of intimacy are often a part of the same character type, especially if there are Saturn aspects. I won't go into them, but some Saturn aspects are likely to produce claustrophobia, and they usually do that if there is a strong focus in a fire sign, because the fire signs most of all do not want their fire damped, and they're afraid of losing it, and it happens that way. I had a girlfriend once that was claustrophobic. Had an archetypal chart for it. Sometimes the obstruction is something social. It's like the social blackball. Or in executive power, since Saturn rules executive, the veto is the perfect Saturnine obstruction. Looking at the symbol of Saturn, I have two varieties of it. One is more artistified. We're still using the same mathematical symbols, and we will almost all the way through all of the planets. And this time we have a symbol that does not have a circle. All we have is a cross and a semicircle. We said that the circle represented spirit, undifferentiated, no beginning, no end, everything perfectly balanced. All of those are qualities of spirit. Here we have only the semicircle, and the semicircle is associated with matter. So we have something here that is pretty primitive. And the cross is above the semicircle. Therefore, the materialization or the matter or the sacrifice that is necessary is preeminent. So the soul nature is underneath the objectifying square principle. And so you have something that is like a cunning. It's almost like an animalistic kind of consciousness. There's a wily kind of caution, and there is a nervous kind of circumspection, and there is a good deal of shrewdness, and anything goes, expedience or circumspection, as though you're walking into a ambuscade or something like that. So even though Saturn is considered the greater malefics, or the greater malefic, whereas Mars is the lesser malefic, these qualities can still be used. There are times that they're necessary. Science and technology rely on them. Even law and sometimes literature is necessary. It's necessary yet. So this is a planet that can be sneaky or subterranean. The symbol comes from the sickle, because Saturn in Greek mythology was called Cronos, and he used a sickle to castrate his sleeping father Uranus. He used a flint sickle, not a popsicle. This represents the manifest state of creation. Uranus represents all kinds of wide open creativity of all different kinds. And in the Uranian stages of creation, at the beginning of the cosmos, there were giants and monstrosities and things like that that were born. But once Saturn set in and castrated that unbounded creativity, materialism came in and things became definite, and then the whole cosmological process became orderly and definite things were learned. So in the very early stages of a creation, the Uranian creativity is necessary because it's all pure spirit and everything is filled with that creative spirit. But in order to accomplish something, you have to get it set down, and that's when the Saturn part comes in. The Saturn is still represented to this day as Father Time. He carries that same sickle and an hourglass, and he's seen as nothing more than a skeleton. And that's perfect for Saturn. It's willing to live on nothing. And if you have only the skeleton, why carry all of that flesh and stuff like that around? It isn't necessary. When you call it, when you're talking about a bare bones approach, you're talking about a Saturn approach. Mythologically, it is Cronos Saturn. Even the name Cronos in Greek is Saturnian. It means black one, or sometimes it means one who speaks with split tongue, depending on the accentuation of the word. Cronus is one of the elder titans. He's one of the precedent gods. He's one of the ancients or the ancestors. And he holds it over people just like old people will do. He rules things with titanic time. Titanic time is where you look from the future back
to the present and the past. It's the time of Merlin. It's Titanic time. It looks from consequence to cause. And when you look backwards, there is more surety. When you're going forward, you're trying to initiate a cause to have a given consequence. But because the future is unknown, you don't know precisely which of several consequences it's going to be. But if you have the end in mind, and Saturn always has the end in mind, and you work backward in time to the present, you know just what to do in order to effect the cause that you want. He's the ruler of the Titans, and he does everything for specific ends. And he has a sense of history. He's just like we say, he's cold, stern, grim, he's a masterful lawgiver, and he's a taskmaster. He's aged, indifferent, deep, and silent. Why talk? You just tip your hand when you talk. This way, if you come out of the dark, nobody knows what's going to come next. Just don't say anything. Keep your mouth shut. Let other people blab and let give you the advantage, you know. That kind of a thing. He's the seed keeper, and he's the planter of the seeds. Seeds representing a condensation of everything from the past life cycle, all packed into one thing that can be maintained over the Saturnian part of the year, over the cold. He's the consolidator, and he's the contractor. As we've seen, he castrates his father Uranus, and he does so using the sinister hand, the left hand. Sinestral means left-handedness. And it's called the hand of infamy. When drops of blood fall out of the castration, they fall to the earth and in the sea, and out of them the Irines are born. And Irines serve justice. They are guilt embodiments, such as if you've committed a crime like murder or something like that, the Irines will chase you like hounds, and you will get no rest until you have atoned or the murder has been justified one way or another. Saturn slays all of his children. He swallows them. So time that gives birth to events also gives death to them. Nothing can remain forever in time. So it's a source of birth and death. But if you try to keep it only in time and not in space and not in form, you will have the situation of overcautious Saturn. Eventually, his wife got sick and tired of having her children being swallowed and dying. And so she gave him a big stone instead and hid Zeus or Jupiter off somewhere else. And eventually Zeus eventually led the, freed the giants and the cyclops out from under the earth, and they overpowered the Titans, and he had his father regurgitate all of the children who were still alive because they were immortal. He's overcome by his son, Zeus. In Norse mythology, it is Loki, or Loj, and their picture is he's a schemer, and he's a betrayer, and he does so by playing on weaknesses. This is a Saturnine way. Now, wolves are ruled by Saturn. You know, and people get these projections about all, they prey on the poor, weak ones. Now, I do believe that survival of the fittest is part of evolution, but I also believe that loving, creative cooperation is also part of evolution. The backstop is the survival of the fittest. And, you know, I believe that various tutelary spirits that guide animals, put them, you know, that the wolves or the coyotes chase rabbits so that there are better rabbits and better coyotes in the future. It's an evolutionary positive thing. But the wolves will always take the weakest deer, and therefore thereby it improves the species. So there's, you know, like we think it's bad. Yes, if you prey on weakness to no good end, that's certainly an abuse of the Saturnine principle. But, you know, to have your weaknesses exposed to you is a wonderful thing. You know, if somebody exposes your weakness, that's the only way you can correct. Because after all, we are divine beings, and as divine beings, it's just like our bodies, you can harm them and they'll heal themselves. In character, you can heal your character. If you have your weak spots pointed out to you, you can become something better. So at any rate, he's sort of like a shyster lawyer. He finds all the loopholes, and he remembers every little detail, and he's a vengeful rememberer. He's very sagacious, and he's very jealous, and he wants to put everybody in their place. He both makes and breaks deals that he has brokered, and he's sort of like the crooked agent. There's nothing in the stories of Norse mythology that come out that make you want to love him. In fact, in many ways, he's a much worse character to deal with than the Saturn of Greco-Roman mythology. He always likes working on people using deceit, which is another good Saturnine word, and he plays on their desires with envy and covetousness. Because with envy and covetousness, you have a feeling that you're lacking something. And Saturn lets you know you're missing something, and you feel incomplete, and you feel in that insecurity, you want that thing, and then he's got it. He's got you right then and there. There's nothing you can do unless you get strong. So Saturn is never satisfied, or Loki is never satisfied. All right, that brings us to planetary figures. Every person in your life represents one or more planets. And every planet in your life represents one or more people. And one of the Saturnine people is the wet blanket. I think you know that kind of person that always can put a damper on everything. It's the kind of person that could be in heaven and find something wrong, and could even perhaps make the angels feel insecure. You know, somebody that'll throw water on any kind of deal. And they do it by preying on fears and insecurities. They do it out of the shadows. They don't focus on themselves. They get you to focus on, you know, on other things than themselves and other things than their intent. And the wet blanket or the negator always uses the little things. Yeah, have any of you ever seen the comedian Don King? He talks about his wife like that. He says, she gets me one neuron at a time. Like this little hitch and that little hitch and that little hitch. You know, it isn't a big slam bam fight kind of thing that, you know, overpowers you or something like that. It's one little thing at a time. These kind of people may not, how many of you know who Joe Bufisk is? You don't know who Joe Bufisk is. One person knows. It goes back to the Little Abner days in the comics. Joe Bufisk was a man that had nothing but bad luck. He was always downtrodden and just sort of hanging as he walked, and he had his own private rain cloud that went over. And that's a Saturnine type of person. But sometimes they can even appear cheery. They'll come to you just as cheery as can be, and at first you say, wow, this is going to be a great interaction. And by the time it's over, man, you know, they'll say one little thing and one little thing and one little thing, and say it in a cheery sort of way. Yeah, I hope you. I'm glad that you've got your automobile insurance paid for, you know. And they'll do all of those kinds of things. Now, it's a funny thing. I have Saturn is my weakest planet in my chart. I don't have many really Saturnian people in my life, and I never have, and they never have really bothered me. I've never been highly frustrated, basically because I cut and run when I'm around Saturn people as much as, as much as possible. And so I have had very few wet blanket people. But the other part of it is I'm like the world, the girl from Oklahoma. Do you remember the song from Oklahoma? I'm just a girl who can't say no. Da da dee 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 dee. And that's me. I'm at the place now that the world, the entire world, I believe that half the people out there in the world that know of me know that I am an assumed yes. I have people that get in contact with me that I've never known before, and they assume that I'm going to do this for them. And I can't say no, because usually what they want is something decent and something good for them. But you know, you begin to wonder after a while. Another person in your life is someone who is venerable, the most highly respected person in your life. For some people, that'll be the major professor. For some people, that'll be the karate master. For some people, that'll be the music director. And for some people, it'll be the priest as the conscience. In sports, it's the veteran. And supposedly in life, it's supposed to be the elder. It's someone that even if you're stupid, you know, there are a lot of stupid athletes out there, but they... But they listen to the veterans, and you hear it in these stupid sports interviews. Yeah, he's been through this before, so we listen to him. And it's that kind of a quality. The strength of Saturn in your life indicates how strong you're going to listen to, how much you're going to listen to venerable people. It's people who people who have been through extreme contests before are likely to do better the next time because they do have that experience. Now, I don't do much of that. I'm still pretty foolhardy. I have Mars in the first house opposing the Saturn, and Saturn is very weak and Mars is not. And I'm something of an iconoclast, and so I've never really had many venerable figures in my life. I'm trying to catch up now. By the end of my life, by the end of his life, my father was a venerable figure to me. I just loved what he did with age, and it made me think about coming into old age and how I'm going to handle it. In fact, in about a month and a half, I'm going to visit a venerable philosopher that is 101 years old, and he will talk me under the table. He's an all-night kind of guy. The father is another Saturnine personification, especially the father who is the boogeyman, the enforcer. When the mother says, just wait till your father comes home, he doesn't even have to be there. He's the heavy without being there. He's the centerpiece. I had a friend that grew up with a maternal grandmother, the mother, and four sisters and one very strong father. And the father lifted a finger at the dinner table and everybody was at attention trying to satisfy him. It's that kind of a centerpiece, I'm in charge kind of person here. One who is the focus of the times. Now my Saturn is in the seventh house. And I have a hard time sometimes differentiating Saturn in Aries from the Sun in Scorpio. Because when I look at a tone picture of either of them, an afflicted Sun in Scorpio at that, both of them have a murky, cloudy, dusky kind of red quality about them. But my father turned out to be much more the solar figure than the Saturnine figure. But because the Sun was in Scorpio, he could use some of the Scorpio principles. And I don't think my father ever struck me. But he threatened me. Scorpio likes to threaten. And that's him. The taskmaster, the boss, the higher influence. It's usually the really hard ones are like the middle management that are right above you, because they got to produce if they want a promotion. And they're not afraid to take it out on you. So they demand everything from you. And sometimes they get there by seniority, but they want to get there by the skin, by your skin, basically. Usually the boss or the higher influence always brings down one of the Saturnine things. Well, we've always done it this way before, but if there's hierarchy, they bring the system to bear on you. And they know all the ins and outs of the system, and that system can just grind you to dust. And they don't even have to use power to do it. They can do it the Saturnine way. I swear that there are people in bureaucracy that can make you go through all kinds of every little detail, and they seem to take pleasure in it. They don't get angry. They give you a poker face, a deadpan poker face, which is surely Saturn. They say, well, this form has to be filled out, and this is the way things have to be. This is the way the order, you know, the order is kept this way. Ah, it's a tough one. It's also somebody who can be the social potentate, someone who is the arbiter of custom or of tradition. Then there is, depending on your Saturn, the fearsome, hateful, dark enemy. And probably the very best portrayal of this one is given by Carlos Castaneda. Petty tyrant. Perfect. It's just the perfect person for yourself. I think in terms of handling negation in spiritual seeking, Carlos Castaneda has done that better than anybody. Because this is probably the best friend that you have on the spiritual path. Because this person can expose every weakness to you. Friends will overlook and they'll ignore your weaknesses, but the enemy or the petty tyrant won't. And they may be the darkest spot in your life, but it's the spot where you do the most growing. I had one such like that. I never met the person, but it was my petty tyrant. And I couldn't find anything redeeming. I was on an internet discussion group that I loved very much. And I was spending enormous amount of time and thought. We'd post on various subjects. And this man got the thing in his mind that I was the person to be taken down. And he would always flame me. And it was sort of like laugh behind your hand kind of thing. And nothing I could do was ever right. Finally, I just quit the discussion group. I'm again one of those that cuts and runs, because I couldn't see myself growing in it anyway, and I wasn't going to waste my time in petty fighting. The naysayer, the spoiled sport, the prophet of doom. For me, that was my wife, because she went through a period in life where I would say for half of my marriage, my duty every night in bed with her, this is not to be a criticism of her because she outgrew it, was she would be crying because either her boss or the professor that she worked for or the dance mistress was down on her. And she always had somebody that was against her. She had a very strong Saturn in her chart. And my duty every night was to calm her down and to help her to get to sleep, because, you know, facing sleep, you know, you look back at the day, and if it seems horrendous to you, it's a very difficult thing. I never realized that after the boss and the dance mistress or the professor that I was going to be the next one. I should have. But but you know, a funny thing happened in that period, because I really cared for her, and I really didn't even mind doing that, but it was a heavy weight. And what would happen is I would get compensation in sleep. I would wake up in the middle of the night laughing hilariously. Yes, it was like a complete psychological compensation. And of course, she was none too happy about that. She's, well, what's going on? Well, I told her, well, you know, I'm not having intercourse, because I don't never laugh about that. But it was like a psychological compensation mechanism, and they worked quite well. The colors for Saturn. Colors for Saturn in the material world: indigo, midnight blue, navy blue, black, dark brown, dark gray, dark green, dark anything. It is a planet that likes things dark. Elements: lead. It's dull. It's heavy. If you put it near absolute zero, it's actually even springy, which is that wiry quality that Saturn has. It's unimpregnable. It's poisonous. Called the graveyard metal. It is an insulation against all radiation. Do you know that the ancient Romans, when they wanted to get rid of people who were, they thought, might eventually be pretenders to being emperors, they actually went and had a man's house lined with lead without him knowing about it. He was in somewhere off in the Mideast. And he was given the position, and the emperor sent ahead some people to set up the house that he was going to be in. And he lived in a lead house, and he died. You know, he didn't get the radiation. He didn't get the good stuff as well as the bad stuff. Another element, calcium. Necessary for innervation, necessary for contracting muscles, necessary for fossilization, ossification, sedimentation, consolidation, aging, arthritis, and you name it. They're all indications of Saturn. If you've used something too much, Saturn comes along and gives you arthritis. I've heard one biologist say that anything that lived long enough would get arthritis somewhere or everywhere. Trees, plants, herbs, and foods. The conifers are in general ruled by Saturn. They're standalone. They don't need other trees, and they don't need birds or bees. They can fertilize themselves. They like the cold, and they're winter resistant. They represent faithfulness, and they represent herbs that are penetrating. And pines are pining. Elms are ruled by Saturn. And you ever try to cut elm wood? Very, very difficult. It's not strong wood. It's not hard wood. Oak is much harder and stronger, but the branches of an oak tree are much harder to break. Not because the wood is strong, but because it twists back in on itself, and it puts fibers in that's very hard, that are very hard to work with. Did I say it wrong? Huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Cypress trees, venerable, and of course they got knees, right? ivy, associated with tradition. Poppies, associated with sedatives. Mandrake, old world mandrake, not American mandrake. Old world mandrake is the herb that they used to use for biting the bullet. It's an herb that if you have mandrake root and you hold it in your teeth, the juices flow down your throat and they become a natural painkiller. Except if you get too much of the juice in you, you have a complete loss of memory for a few months and then kaplink, it comes back to you again. Yes, it was called mandrake because it's in the ginseng family. And it forms roots that look like a man with with legs like that, and it was so sacred that it was a great thing to own and have mandrake. The trouble was though that it was resinous, and if you pulled it out of the ground, it was said that it was a sacred thing that you were killing a man. And it screamed when you pulled it out of the ground. And even if you couldn't audibly hear it, when you pulled it out by the root, you were sure to die within a very short time. But it was such an herb that was in such demand and desire that, this is from Herodotus, this part, that they wanted to they wanted to harvest it. And so when they would find mandrake, they would dig down, and they would basically have the man, like almost like an archaeological dig, and they dig all the soil away except for the very bottom part because they wanted the whole root. And then what they would do is they would tie a noose on the root so that it would be pulled out whole, and then you would tie it to the tail of the neighbor's dog. You lost a few dogs that way, but you got all the mandrake you wanted. Oh, Herodotus's history is very, very fun stuff to read. There was another way that you could get mandrake. If you had mandrake tied around your left wrist while pulling with the right wrist, you were invulnerable to the scream of the mandrake plant. But if you had that mandrake in the first place, why did you? You didn't need another one. Usually, all winter herbs and all sedative herbs are ruled by Saturn, and most nervine herbs together with Mercury are ruled by Saturn. Mineral foods, aged foods, dark greens that are heavily laden with calcium, such as spinach, for example, or chard, and some root foods. The planetary emissary is Cassiel. So if you're having trouble with fear, or if you're having trouble with an obstruction or something like that, if you meditate or talk to yourself as Cassiel interiorly on Saturday morning in the first hour after sunrise, you will get help. Of course, you have to be able to listen to the still small voice within. If you can do that, you might not need the emissary. Yes? C-A-S-S-A-E-L. A-E-L means of God. It's a Hebrew suffix. In physiology and psychology and anatomy, the skeleton and the joints are ruled by Saturn. And the things that go wrong with the skeleton and the joints, such as arthritis, is a very Saturnian thing. The gallbladder, together with Scorpio, is ruled by Saturn. Usually, resentfulness is behind gallstones. The skin is ruled by Saturn. Obstructions and blockages are ruled by Saturn. And there's one special nerve that is ruled by Saturn, and that is one of the longest nerve in the body is ruled by Saturn. It's called used to be called the pneumogastric nerve, and it's now called the vagus nerve. If you have Saturn in Aries, I can tell you it's really tough. It gives headaches like you'd never believe. Ligaments, cartilage, and tendons are ruled by Saturn. blockages, all hypo conditions, not hyper, but hypo conditions. Anything that's underperforming or performing too slowly or something like that is a Saturnite condition. Viruses are ruled by Saturn. In the categories, it's a primitive, which I have misspelled in the notes here. It is a nocturnal planet, meaning to say that it is cold and dark and dank and all of those kinds of things. It is a superior planet in that it is outside the orbit of the Earth. It is the planetary opposite of Jupiter, who we will speak about Friday night. See what you're missing? it can go either masculine or feminine. It's hard to tell whether it is masculine or feminine. It's a crystallizer. It is an inertial planet, and in a special category, it is a spiritual opposite to the sun, the life and death opposition. Not a planetary opposite, but a spiritual opposite. It rules Capricorn and Aquarius, so that if you have Capricorn on the third house, it might be someone who is short of speech, so to speak. And if Saturn is in the fourth house, while Capricorn is on the cusp of the third, it's somebody that might be preoccupied in the subconscious, and that's why they're short of speech and they can't verbalize. Or if a Capricorn is on the fifth house, it may mean not having children. And if Saturn in the seventh house, it may mean that you're not having children because your spouse is blocked from having children. Or if Saturn is in the ninth house, there might be some religious inhibition that keeps you from having children or something of that nature. Saturn is also co-ruler of Aquarius. So wherever Aquarius is will affect Saturn, and wherever Saturn is, it will affect things going on in Aquarius. If Aquarius is in the eighth house, it might indicate someone who works with a large-scale humanistic shared money with other people. And if it would be in the Saturn would be in the fifth house, the shared money would be a foundation or something like that for children. Or if it's in the second house, it would be a conflict of interest between personal finances and finances that belong to everyone. If Aquarius is on the 11th house, it might mean a profession having to do with science and electronics. And if Saturn is in the first house, it would be like from first-hand experience that you would be. I once ran into a man who was an electrician that was an estimator, and he had everything in the second house associated with the 11th house. But if it's a scientist and Saturn is in the 12th house, it means somebody that has a destiny to be in the laboratory all the time. In the 12th house. Oops. Oh. I don't know. We'll talk about that some other time. I don't know how that. Saturn has its detriment in Cancer and Leo, meaning to say it can't stand all that sentimentality of Cancer and all that gushiness, and it doesn't like to be out in the bright light of the sun. It wants to be at the top of things socially, but it doesn't want to be in the bright light of the sun. Saturn in Leo is something like throwing a black stone out on a desert day, a sunny day in the desert. That stone just attracts all of the heat and it gets hotter and hotter. It has its exaltation in Libra because it knows right where the fulcrum is, right where the balance point is, and it's willing to deliberate for justice. It has its fall in Aries, and the thing that comes out there is that it produces frustration. Saturn in Aries is often the signature of a murderer. If Saturn is in the east, don't worry, I won't murder you. if Saturn is in the east, meaning anywhere in the first house, and halfway up into the 12th house, but most especially if it conjoins the ascendant, the body is likely to be a little bit smaller. It's also likely to be more lean. A very good description of Saturn in the east is given by Johannes Kepler, where he says, I'm thin and I have wiry muscles, and that's a perfect description. It's likely to indicate skin conditions and flashing kinds of eyes. If it's in the first house, it's likely to be adoption right after birth. Sometimes the eyes are very cold. Sometimes Saturn indicates deformities. Wherever Saturn is indicates where you're likely to beatings. I have it in Aries, and I bump my head all the time. But if you have Saturn in the east, you're likely to general beatings. Likely to have penetrating eyes. No matter what the racial stock, it's likely to be darker. Sometimes, though, the opposite happens. A person can be pale and consumptive, and short, and hard. But Saturn in the east very often has excellent teeth. And that's because they often have a childhood that they have to work very hard, and there's something about setting firm teeth working hard in childhood. Some tendencies to be depressive or melancholy. The most famous case of Saturn in the east is Abraham Lincoln with his perennial constipation. Down looking. It's very like a little wrinkled, and sometimes the person looks old even when young. Sometimes the person is a greaser. Sometimes there are anomic kinds of features, and very often with Saturn there are sensuous lips. And Saturn in the east, one is often raised by elders, grandparents or foster parents or something like that. That's all. I think that ended up just about exactly 90 minutes, huh?